We'll just say right here that we forgive Debbie Stoller for all of her transgressions.
Leave that in.
I'm going to lead with that.
Yes.
Talking about young adult literature is not for the faint of heart. There's fashion atrocities, queer subtext, problematic love interests, and that's just for a start. But never fear, because Carrie and Marie are here, and this is Go Your Own YA.
Hi, and welcome to Go Your Own YA. I'm Marie.
And I'm Carrie.
Carrie, why are you qualified to talk about young adult literature?
I am not qualified to talk about young adult literature. I'm sorry, I've been brought here under false pretenses. I really don't like books or reading. I would like to just turn this recording software off and go to bed. Thank you. So how about you? Why are you here?
I'm here because my cat is named Weetsy Bat, and for some reason, people think this means I have a fetish for young adult literature, and I refuse to grow up and read literary fiction, and I don't know. What do adults do? What do adults in New York do? I think they just hang out in their pajamas and watch, like, Rachel Maddow.
That's what the women do. You're forgetting about the men. The men have midlife crises and they have affairs with beautiful young women.
And I don't know if y'all have seen this quote from The Witches of Eastwick by John Updike about how men pee with great audacity, thundering upon the porcelain throne. I am not making this up. This is not a joke.
Oh, I know. I know this is true. And this is why I don't read books written for adults, if I can help
it. So our book this week, our books, in fact, is the Chicks with Sticks series. Now, this is the series by Elizabeth Lenhard. There are new books called the Chicks with Sticks series. I don't know anything about them except they come up in my Amazon.com search. Carrie, how did you find out about these?
I found these books when I was staying over at a friend's house in Seattle. And I guess right after they came out, so it would have been like 2005 or 2006. But I found this book in her bookshelf, and it was about, you know, teenagers in Chicago, which is where I am from. And they were knitting, and they were searching for a place to belong. And so that's my story. Now, did I tell you about them, or did you find out about them?
I think we found out about them convergently, because the way I discovered them was that there's this magical bookstore in New York City that sells publishers' ARCs, the advanced reader copies, which is not technically legal, so I'm not going to tell you which magical bookstore it is.
I know what it is.
But... there's actually two of them, so no matter which one you know it is, it could be the other one. And I saw this pretty colorful cover, and I opened it up, and there were magical words inside. And at the time, I was running a blog called Leaving Shangri-La, which was for Francesca Block read-alikes. And it was like, yeah, this is a book with a strong sense of place and a search for self and arty goodness. Yeah. And I read it, and I enjoyed it, and we both got together and talked about it, and 12 years later, we are still talking about it.
And I don't think we will ever stop. Let's add 3 minutes of silence in there.
I need the 3 minutes of silence to, like, get used to the idea that these books are 12 years old.
That's insane. I was just trying to do that math in my head, like, when was that? And then that means that all of those students that I was teaching that year are all, like, old enough to drive and looking at colleges, and that's not okay.
No, I was in college back then.
Oh my God, that's right. That's the other thing. I still think of you as being in college. You are still, like, 18 and going to Italy.
So if we're going to backtrack a little, Carrie and I met on LiveJournal, which for those of you who may have not been born yet when LiveJournal was first a thing, but it's basically online diaries on the internet, and there were memes before they were memes, and there was discourse before discourse was a thing, and it was a magical and terrible time, and I used to co-mod a group on what was essentially whimsical fuckery, and Carrie found me there, and we've been friends ever since, which is minimum 12 years. I think longer.
At least, yeah.
Oh my goodness, it's been so long. And I think also to backtrack again, the reason we're covering this particular period of book is because I think that Lizzie Skernick and Teen Creeps cover the like first wave of young adult literature that really kind of opened doors and made it its own category. I mean, it's something that made literary people take, you know, sit up and take notice, but it was still kind of a pulpy category at the time. I feel like the early aughts is when things started getting a little more experimental and a lot more diverse, and it became more of the zeitgeist that it is these days. And young adult being the way it is, people do tend to, like, you know, first there's a book and then there's another book, and they kind of forget the backlist and books that may have been in print only 10 years ago. So it's kind of nice to return to them and see what seeds they laid for the wonderful, sparkly, headless sprouts. But they have kind of finally started putting girls with heads on book covers. I noticed that. I like that. That was a trend that was terrible and I hated it.
Oh, God, the headless girls, the shoes, and then the headless girls. The headless girls made me miss the shoes.
And in fact, the first Chicks with Sticks books has headless girls.
That's true. Actually, they grow heads by the second one. And then the third, they continue to have heads.
But they still put the butch girl on the back. Because you can't market it unless you capitulate to feminine standards of dress and behavior.
Now that is a catchy song. Before we get into our deep feelings about this butch character and all the other wonderful chicks, should we talk just a little bit about what these books are about? We've made a few references to, maybe we haven't even made some references to what these sticks are.
Well, they're not drumsticks. They're not hockey sticks. They're not for stickball. These are all things I was looking up on the internet. They are all current Chicks with Sticks, like, groups. And I think you're all awesome. Way to go. But sadly, this is about none of those.
Are you going to tell us what they're about?
It's about knitting.
Knitting!
Knitting!
Remember 2005? Remember 2005 when we were all knitting? That was such a good time.
Yes, I very much remember the knitting train. I myself am not a fiber arts kind of person. I do appreciate it, and my girlfriend crochets, and she crochets beautifully. But I've always appreciated it from afar. But you, Carrie, you knit.
I have knitted many rectangles, long rectangles and short rectangles. And in between rectangles. And sometimes I've sewn those rectangles into different kinds of rectangular shapes. Actually, I made a teddy bear last year.
Aww. Was it made of rectangles?
Of course. All bears are made out of rectangles. Have you never been to a zoo?
I live down the street from a zoo.
Some weird zoo with circles.
We don't have bears, but we do have a palace cat, which is made of circles and anger.
See, circles I can't knit, but anger, I think, finds its way into anything that I do knit.
So, now that we've given our own backgrounds with the whole knitting trends of the early aughts, Carrie, do you want to tell us what the first book is about?
The first book, Chicks with Sticks. It's a pearl thing, in parentheses. So Scotty is our protagonist. She's, what is she in this one? She's a sophomore in high school. She lives in Chicago. Her parents are, well, her mother is an artist and her dad is basically her mom's biggest fan slash manager. Her sister is a film student. So she's grown up surrounded by cool artsy people, and she goes to super artsy cool prep school, and she likes to blend in, and she's searching for community, and she's searching for the hole that's been left in her life since her aunt died, since her best friend grew boobs and therefore stopped hanging out with her. I'm not sure which one of these is like the bigger tragedy she's dealing with. It kind of changes from page to page which one is harder for poor Scotty.
Hashtag being a teenager.
I definitely relate. And then she is introduced to knitting, and then just magic happens from there. She goes to a magical yarn store in magical Andersonville, Chicago. Her best friend ends up there. Two new girls end up there, and the four of them become kind of sisterhood of the traveling pants, except with yarn. There's a lot more drama and a lot more yarn metaphors and a lot of second wave feminism. I think that sums up book one of Chicks with Sticks.
Yes. So Chick 2 is all of the above, but it also has the theme of Scotty has lots of feelings about boys, but nobody, her friends least of all, decide to teach her about consent and communication as it applies to relationships with boys or others.
That is a really good description of what happens in book 2. I would also add my number one note under my Chicks with Sticks 2 section. This one is Chicks with Sticks Knit 2 Together. I have in big caps, heteronormativity, yay.
That's fantastic.
That's basically how book 2 goes. And book 3, why don't you tell us about what happens in the third book of this trilogy, Chicks with Sticks Knitwise.
Elizabeth Lenhard had plans for 2 more books, but her editor told her you only get 1 more. So all of those books are smushed into 1 book. So there. And like Elizabeth Lenhard, if you're listening, I think you're wonderful. These books are great and they say amazing, beautiful things. And I do not have any harsh feelings about, you know, choices you made because an editor told you to do something, because I know authors don't have a lot of control over that. So kudos for you for getting a book contract and fulfilling it and being awesome and having books out there.
Yes, I will echo that statement and say I really wish that I could see all the cool things that are introduced in book 3 and also in book 2 expanded into like a bigger series. I want to know more about these threads that come in and then have to be dropped because something else comes up. And I probably have a lot of notes about that.
Me too. Now, the thing that really struck me about the book, I think I opened it to a scene where Scotty is on the L first going to the magical yarn store where she, you know, destiny awaits her. And I was struck by the incredible sense of place in these books. Now, Carrie, like readers, listeners, has done something amazing and gone on a field trip to places where the book may have taken place.
It's true. It's true. I drove all the way to where I work. And later I went to where I used to live. And now I'm where I live right now. So I worked really hard for this. So do you want me to talk about Chicago in this series?
Yes, please.
Because I have a lot of feelings. And there are a lot of great things about Chicago in here. She gets winter in Chicago just right. There's a great bit in the first book, and I'm going to find it, and then I'm going to edit out my looking for it. Scotty had always hated Chicago's winter. The sun set at 4:30 in the afternoon, and the sidewalks became a series of treacherous ice rinks. Scotty shivered all the time, constantly craving fuzzy fleeces, down duvets, and loads of hot chocolate. Every time she left her drafty loft, she had to wrap herself in so many layers she looked like a thinsulate-clad potato. By February, she was always feeling shrivelly and despondent. This winter, though, Scotty thought with a deep sigh, is going to be different. And it goes on to explain it's going to be different because she and her friends are going to knit together. And that's such a great description of how miserable Chicago winters are and how wonderful you can make them if you reach out to the right people and build community.
Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful. And, well, readers and listeners, Carrie is in Chicago, I'm in New York City. So between the two of us, we're going to cover a lot of did this really happen and could this really happen ground in young adult literature. Our winters are similar, except, you know, the bone-chilling cold is replaced by, like, icy, dirty slush and an inevitable, like, sense of doom.
Yes.
But the cure is the same. Hole up with your friends, get a hot drink, knit some things, have feelings about your sexy best friend.
About multiple sexy best friends. If you have three best friends and they're all really hot, then you are doing winter right.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I have feelings about that as well.
Do you want to talk about those feelings right now?
I think we should like circle back on it after we hit all the... Okay, so you talked about what she got right about Chicago. What didn't work as well?
All right. So do you want me to talk about how Scotty cannot live within walking distance of DePaul? I don't understand. I don't understand how she lives there, but also lives in Ravenswood.
I don't live there, and I haven't been there in like 7 years, and I know that doesn't work.
Yeah, there are just some neighborhood things on and off that make me think, really? Like Wicker Park is described as like a yuppie neighborhood. And I've taken you to Wicker Park. You know,
is it the one with the bookstore or the one with the bookstore?
It was the one with the bookstore, actually. It was the one where you introduced me to James and we had lunch at the Handlebar. So that bookstore.
Right.
Yes.
Waffles and titties. Readers and listeners, we're not going to tell you what that means yet.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, but I think part of that is just that Chicago neighborhoods change a lot. And I mean, we're looking at a book that was published in 2005 and was surely written before that. Elizabeth Lenhard lived here for 5 years before she moved back to Georgia. So says the cover of the books. And maybe it was a little bit more like that when she was living here. I do not know. It's really hot. I'm going to turn on the air for a minute. You can talk because I'm melting.
Singing the air conditioner song, hoping it won't be very long, except it can be as long as it needs to be because it's the air conditioner song.
Second verse. Oh, she mentions Katerina's. I think that's in the second book. She wants to go on a romantic date to Katerina's, and that has unfortunately closed, but it's special to me because it is where my now husband gave me my engagement ring.
Aww.
Yeah, while we were watching the guys who ended up being our wedding band finish their show on Valentine's Day at the stroke of midnight as the snow fell outside.
Aww. And if you think that's an, you know, amazing story, readers and listeners, wait until the Christmas episode where she tells how they met each other. It's incredible. It took several paragraphs on LiveJournal.
This was diary land. Back when Neil and I first met, this was the diary land era.
Oh, I never even had one of those. I wanted one, but I never had one.
Oh, diary land was great. And I am old, and it's still around.
It's not currently owned by Russians, so if you're feeling really retro, get on that one. Is there really a hot dog place called Flucky Dogs, or is that a typo in my book?
Called Flukies?
Yeah, Flucky Dogs.
Flucky Dogs. Yeah, Flukies is real. I've never been there, but it's a legit thing, I promise you. We don't joke about encased meats in Chicago. In fact, we call them encased meats to show you how serious we are.
I was going to make a ketchup joke, but I fear.
No,
for
do
my
not
life.
Do that. This Chicago hot dog sauce.
I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it. I've got the ketchup ready.
So anyway, Scotty.
Scotty don't know, but Tay does.
Should we talk about Tay and Bella and maybe Amanda too, the sexy friends?
Yes. Gosh, they are sexy. And I feel a little strange saying that as a freshly minted 32-year-old. I was on Tumblr the other day, and there was a discussion about the word queer and how the latest generation of LGBTQ teens no longer thinks it's appropriate to use it. And a woman, probably about 10 years older than me, was saying, you know, in the 90s, we started reclaiming it, and it has this very long, varied history. And we fought long and hard for that word, so if you don't want to use it, fine, but don't tell other people what to do. So a youngin said, don't you have taxes to pay or something?
I don't know, don't you have avocado toast to eat? In the house that you aren't gonna buy?
Bella does. There's
oh,
a
Bella.
Surprising lack of avocados in a book with a health food nut.
That's true. And that makes me want to talk a little bit about how these girls are secretly the Babysitters Club.
Yes. So readers and listeners, we also have a thing where we're going to have a lifetime count of references to the Babysitters Club and references to the Betsy Tacy series. And I think at the end of the year, we should tally it up and have a pledge drive and raise the bar and put on a show and yeah, make a Kickstarter.
All right, so Scotty has her best sexy friend, Amanda, who's been her friend since before she was sexy. And then at the yarn store, they meet two more girls. They meet Tay, who is the sexy butch girl, and Bella, who is the sexy hippie girl. And Amanda, we should point out, is the sexy debutante girl. So we've got four different types, and you can, if you want, kind of map the girls onto the Babysitters Club, but you have a little problem when it gets to Christy, because Scotty and Tay are both Christy.
That's a good point.
Tay might also be Abby, but I don't like to think of Abby as existing, so your mileage may vary.
I identify as an Abby.
It's okay. You're young. Abby is not canon for me.
I accept that.
Thank you. But this kept coming up in my head when I was reading, because a thread through all three books is Scotty wanting very desperately to have a community and a place where she fits in. And then once she has that, to keep it at all costs. There's a lot of talk about like her insecurity and some kinds of abandonment issues. I have in my notes, is Scotty just Christy Thomas with knitting needles? And I think this is true. And for readers who do not have the encyclopedic knowledge of the Babysitters Club, as some people on this podcast do.
It's both of us.
It is. I wrote down, this is why the series resonates for me. It's all about looking for belonging and instant home and friendship and an identity. And this is what Scotty does throughout the three books. She wants to find who she is. She wants to find a home. She thinks she's found it in knitting. She gets scared when things change. Her beloved Alice, who runs the awesome yarn store, closes up the yarn store. She has fights with her friends. In the third book, they're going off to college. And if you haven't read the final Babysitters Club Friends Forever graduation day, or any of the later ones where you really see Christy kind of starting to crack. Christy's worst idea is my favorite for this reason, because Christy is clinging to the babysitter's club because she is afraid of change. She's afraid of high school and she's afraid of being left behind. And babysitting is all she has left. And being the ruler of the babysitter's club is like the one place where she is in charge and not just a tiny and scared 13-year-old. So Scotty is doing the same thing with knitting. And as a knitter, like, she gets to put all of this into her art. And so she's making memory quilt squares. And, you know, every time she hangs out with her friends, it's a special event. It's, Tay says something that cracked me up. She suggests that they have the Chicks with Sticks second Wednesday in November Diet Coke run.
I was just reading that one. As I was skimming the last book 2 hours before the podcast.
Okay, so I'm off my soapbox about Scotty and Change and the Babysitter's Club.
No, it's definitely something that I've noticed. And going on that theme about Scotty looking for belonging and a sense of place and self, what struck me this time around reading is that one of her strongest guides in this journey is it, you know, it's not herself, it's not knitting, it's not the omniscient narrator, it's Amanda. Amanda is the most emotionally intelligent person in this series, including the adults.
I love that. I really loved Amanda again this time around.
There's so many things that Amanda could be, especially since, like, these books were written at, like, the height of Gossip Girl. And she was written, I imagine, to sort of take that Gossip Girl stereotype and play with it and be like, hey, you expect all these things of a rich girl from the Gold Coast, but she's actually none of them.
Except blonde. No, wait, she's not even blonde.
She's a brunette.
She's blonde. She is so blonde in my head that I ignore all the illustrations and all the evidence to the contrary.
No, she's blonde on the first book too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's her in the orange jacket, I think.
Possibly.
Scotty's definitely a brunette. And Tay is sporting some wicked cool henna tattoos.
Oh, I have the paperback, so gotcha. I've only got three girls in the front, and I think you're right. I see the orange. That's definitely Amanda. And then Scotty next to her. And then that looks like Bella wearing leg warmers and fringe or...
But do you see Tay?
No.
That's
not on
the point.
Paperback.
That's why it's called queer erasure.
Should we get into it?
Yes, we should. And another sidebar for our listeners and our readers and Elizabeth Leonhard, we think that it is so important to have butch role models and masculine role models for straight girls, and also to have multi-sexual, bisexual, pansexual teenagers portrayed in a loving and respectful light. And also in this book, Scotty is super gay for Tay. Oh my God.
Not just in one book. We're talking all three.
All three.
I have a little purple heart that I used as my icon for every time there was a reference to Scotty being totally queer, which made me really happy.
Can you list off some of them? Because I also have a special sidebar for all the separate instances of their subtextual love.
All right. Starting from the beginning, we've got Scotty definitely not being obsessed with Amanda's body. Page 22, first book. Then we meet Tay for the first time, and Scotty's definitely not checking her out on page 59 or page 60.
Don't forget, on page 57, punk girls make her nervous.
Would you like to read that part?
There was a reason Scotty didn't know Tay. It wasn't just that she was a grade younger, or that their lockers may have been on opposite sides of the H-shaped Olivia Stark school. The fact was, Scotty tended to avert her eyes when girls like Tay walked by. They made her nervous. Not the way they scared adults, who thought tattoos and piercings were just gateways to gang tags and meth binges. Please. No, Scotty was freaked by their bravery. That rocker girl ability to scream out their rage, to yell it into microphones, or carve it into poetry, or cut off their hair and pierce their eyebrows. She was freaked by that baddestness because she wished she had it too. Of course, she so didn't. Scotty.
You don't have to be it. You can just date it.
And dating brings us, I think, to talking more about what happens in book two, all about boys. And Scotty has crushes all of a sudden on every boy. She goes very teen girl squad in this one. And Amanda points out, I wrote this line down, you know, Scotty, your boy problem is that you don't actually like boys. But Scotty does meet a boy that she does like, a boy who is attainable and not imaginary. And it's Beck. And I'm going to just say this. What is Scotty wearing when she meets Beck? She is wearing a pair of traitorous lavender pants
that crawl up her butt. And she is picking a wedgie when she realizes this unimaginably cute boy is staring at her.
I'm sorry, we brought up Beck and then I fell asleep. So I'm back now.
He's a fan of Woody Allen, so we can just go to sleep forever and wake up when his plot line is over.
Yeah, well, it's pre-Skis Woody Allen. He does mention that. And then Scotty refers to Annie Hall as the most romantic movie ever.
Scotty, there's a movie. It's called Better Than Chocolate. You should watch it. You're going to like it a lot.
She does also in that book try to make a date with Beck to see Kissing Jessica Stein.
Oh.
And he can't make it, so she goes with the chicks instead. And they all watch Kissing Jessica Stein.
Right. That's not in my notes. I think it's just another line of why, Beck, why. And again, readers, listeners, Beck is a perfectly average, fine teenage boy. He just kind of fits in with the theme of love interests that aren't, you know, the writers don't quite sell us on how amazing they are. And there are very, very few writers who can sell us on the amazingness of teenage boys.
Yeah, that is true. I think that's okay. It's okay, writers, you don't have to get the old 30-somethings to fall in love with your teenage boys.
Like, please don't. We're not your audience. We're just a byproduct.
We're just hanging around until someone finally kicks us out and says we can't be here anymore. Oh, and Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, as long as we're talking about movies. Can we talk about the fact that for one of their sacred sleepovers, Tay suggests it. Now, have you seen Beyond the Valley of the Dolls?
No, but I know that there is a lot of soft drug and lesbian aesthetics in it.
Yes, very, very much. There's a great lesbian subplot with Casey and Roxanne, whose love is not an evil love, but evil does come about because of it. That's a direct quote from the end.
Sad. And I don't know if you caught this, but the first movie that Tay suggests is Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
That's right, yes.
And it's suggested by Beck. Beck trying to set Scotty and Tay up so Beck can, like, hit on college chicks and make Scotty happy. Is Beck actually an arbiter of Scotty's happiness all along?
Yes. I'm going to give you a hard yes on that because that makes me like
him.
Yeah,
now I like Beck.
And he's not the only one. I think Tay's boyfriend, who, by the way, shows up in an epilogue for book one, and we never know how they got together. We don't know anything about him. In the third book, he makes Scotty smell her. Smell her, yes. Scotty. Page 111. Doesn't she smell
Doesn't
great?
She smell delicious?
Yes. Yes, she does.
Yeah, Elizabeth Lunhard, we love you. None of this was subtle.
I mean, we are both primed to find that sort of thing in books, but there was no digging that needed to be done. This is all right here in the text.
It's not subtext. It's like hypertext. It's like dancing around and eating Skittles and Good and Plenty's and Oh, and when Scotty memorizes Tay's list of 100 things about herself from her secret live journal, like, let me tell you about being a closeted queer teen whose only queer life was on the internet. A lot of that happened. A lot of obsessing over people's live journals happened.
I miss blogs. Wow, I really do.
I do, by which I mean I don't.
Yes.
So we should talk about knitting. Yes. So I think I loved about the books is that, you know, I'm not a knitter. I'm a paper crafter and I draw and I write. But it really brought the act of knitting and what makes like knitting beautiful and magical alive, like the tactileness and the choosing patterns and making something out of nothing and the uphill battle of it resulting in something beautiful.
It is so true. And I think Elizabeth Leonard really captures that so well. All of Scotty's struggles, like to kind of differentiate herself from her family. Her mom tries to kind of welcome her into the artist fold when she finds out about the knitting and is, oh, Scotty, you're a fiber artist. And Scotty bristles very hard at that. Oh, there's all this stuff she's thinking about crafts versus real art. What is art and how do you measure the worth of a creation?
Her mom gives her a book called Softness and Surrealism, Women Fiber Artists of the 20th Century, which sadly is not a real book because I would want to read it.
I looked it up. I messaged you when I found out that it did not exist. And I was very, very bummed. I was going to say something else and I got distracted by that too, just in my notes, Softness and Surrealism.
Scotty may not have been impressed by what she saw in the book, but there are incredible fiber artists out there, and I will include some links to some in the show notes because knitting is awesome and crafting is awesome and fiber arts are awesome and it's all good. Yay!
I look forward to seeing some of those links. Oh, this is what I was looking for, what Scotty tells her mom. You don't get to decide what it is, it being knitting as art, knitting as a craft. Whether one of these things is inherently better than the other, you don't get to decide what it is. I do.
The really wonderful thing about that is in the second book, Scotty and her mom come and see eye to eye about the process because they're both blocked. And what they both needed was a change in perspective and a change in materials and just change all around.
I love that. I love when the two of them have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then Scotty's mom's painting
Aww.
That she makes. Who is it of? This wonderful painting that came out of her long painting block. It's a painting of Scotty and the chicks knitting together. Made out of coffee.
Coffee angels. Knitting coffee angels. It's so cute.
Now, I do love the progression of Scotty's relationship with her mom. I think that's something in the book that's really well done. Looking at family stuff, Scotty also has this artist sister, and in my head, she's Judy Funny from the cartoon Doug. I just picture her as like a fake beatnik wearing a beret and sunglasses and reciting poetry. She's a filmmaker, and she jumps onto knitting with all the other trend heads in book two. This is when Scotty's trying to figure out if she is still special and if knitting is still special, if other people are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So Jordan, Scotty's sister, jumps onto knitting for a while and then she gives it up in book three. She says, I'm kind of over that scene. I mean, yeah, knitting was the new yoga, but now yoga is the new Pilates and quilting is the new knitting.
I remember there's even a very small subplot about a turf war and quilting.
The babes with batting.
Ooh, ah.
This is another Babysitter's Club thing. This is Truth About Stacy or any of the ones where like other babysitters try to babysit.
So, like, Koki, I mean, Alana, has a grudge against Scotty because apparently Alana farted during a seance and Scotty told on her in fourth grade.
I thought it was because she had a crush on Scotty's boyfriend, Logan, from Louisville, Kentucky.
No, it's because she tried to have friends outside the Babysitter's Club.
Never, ever try to have friends. Amanda actually calls Scotty on that. Like, why can't I have, like, different places where I belong? And Scotty's like, isn't one place enough?
I made a note of that, too. And there's definitely a... It's sort of nice in the second book where it sort of clicks, like, yeah, I can be different things to different people. And it's why I would have loved to see a more full story about the little Sib that she gets in book 3. We haven't even covered the little Sib plot line.
Let's talk about the little Sib plot line. Take us there.
Nina!
Nina, I love her.
So Scotty in the third book is a senior and she has to do a senior volunteer project. Now, while Bella is flitting from, you know, green cause to green cause, Scotty decides that she's going to be a big Sib to a little Sib, which is like the boys club and girls club that we have in the city. And I imagine in Chicago, too.
Now, she doesn't really decide it. She just kind of falls into it. And not literally. There's a lot of slapstick in book 3, but this is not one of those scenes. She just falls into the little Sib program and it ends up being really wonderful for her.
Now, Nina is the daughter of a single mom. She's got 3 younger siblings and she's in this program because adults in her life decided she needs to come out of her shell more. It's not that she has any problems per se, but they do think she needs to socialize as a kid and not just as mom and big sister to little kid. So Nina doesn't know quite what to make of Scotty, and Scotty doesn't quite know what to make of her until they get together and have some chocolate and figure out, hey, you know, this might not be like hanging out with the chicks, but it's still pretty good. And I could be a positive force in this kid's life. And, you know, she just needs time to be a kid. And hey, you want to try knitting?
You could also argue that by hanging out with this preteen girl, Scotty is just trying to recapture, Christy Thomas style, her own lost youth.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that. I especially think that that comes through. There's a scene later in the book where Scotty is reminiscing about time she spent with her beloved Aunt Roz, her aunt who passed away before the events of the first book. And her aunt took her out to what she called Ladies' Day, and they go to see the miniature rooms in the Chicago Institute of Art. Did I get the name right?
Chicago Art Institute.
There we go. That's what it's called. We'll add a link in the show notes. Carrie showed them to me. They are magical. Tiny little people come out. If you stare at them long enough, I promise I'm not pulling your leg.
I'll note for listeners that I took you to the Thorn Miniature Rooms because you asked me to take you for Ladies' Day.
Yes, we did.
You specifically said, let's have Ladies' Day like Scotty and Aunt Roz. And so we did that part.
And I asked you for a book for beginners about music theory, and you found me a coloring book.
Oh my God, that's right. Well, you wanted a book for beginners, and there it was. And it was so cool because you got to make it pretty.
You did. You should have bought it.
While you learned, you got to create.
That's beautiful. So Scotty has this beautiful plan to take her out to Ladies' Day, like her aunt had done with her. But when she shows up at Nina's house, Nina's mom had an emergency meeting or something to go to, and she's watching all of the siblings. And Scotty realizes, hey, Nina has so much responsibility. What she needs now is not escapism. She needs my help. So she stays with her and babysits with her, and they have a slumber party all day, and it's very sweet, but it does cause Scotty to have a crisis of self. She goes to the head of the program and says, I've ruined everything. I need to quit. And the woman who runs the program says, hey, I ruined everything, and I decided to quit my life, and then I became a social worker and founded Big Sibs Little Sibs Chicago. Just because you don't have it all figured out and you're not perfect doesn't mean you can't do good things, and I think what you did for Nina was just right.
And I love that scene. As somebody who has ruined her life many times over and then started
I do nothing but ruin my life. This podcast is because I ruined my life. And I was like, let's do a podcast.
Oh, it was synchronicity. And I was even doing an artist's way class at
the time.
That's
so wild.
I was literally saying in the artist's way group, I'd really like to try doing a podcast. So when you messaged me and were like, let's finally do this, because it was something that I think we talked about before, but we talk about a lot of things.
We talk about so many things.
So when you were interested in doing this for real, it was like synchronicity. And whenever I do Artist's Way, when Julia Cameron asks you each week, like, well, did you have any synchronicity? I'm always like, no, I'm sorry. It's really sad. Then I feel like I've let her down and I've let Martin Scorsese down, and that's the worst part. And the horses.
Oh, no.
I let Domenica Scorsese's horses down.
We should have an Artist's Way sidebar in some episode.
We should. I think this one is a good one. Like, these books are a good entree into talking about the Artist's Way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to talk about here with Scotty and her artistic process and her friends and their artistic process. Like, we barely talked about that, about Amanda fashion designing.
Bella's individuating.
Poor Bella. I feel bad about Bella.
So, by the way, readers and listeners, if you are reading these books in 2017, please note that Bella is the Claudia Kishi of the group. And Bella is a beautiful individual soul. And her friends love her, but can't help but exoticize her and call her crazy and beautiful when she is a biracial girl with feelings and emotions and all sorts of goals in her life and a really amazing plot line in book three.
Which comes out of nowhere to the reader because we are stuck in Scotty's head and all we get from Scotty looking at Bella is, oh, my friend Bella's homeschooled and she makes groat muffins and she's so beautiful and exotic and she has trouble with balance poses in yoga.
So, groat muffins were the acai bowls of the early aughts. They were something called carbs. I don't know.
I think those have been outlawed.
Oh my gosh, they eat so much junk food in these books that even I, who loves junk food, was like, oh my gosh, please. Salads are good.
Take care of yourselves, kids.
How do you poop?
It's like Gilmore Girls level junk food consumption.
And I mean, I understand that these books are a way for the reader to escape. And one of the things that kind of annoyed me when I was reading the Goodreads reviews of these books, which you should never do, was like all the readers were like, oh, it's so unrealistic. Oh, I would never act like this. It's like, you're not supposed to act like this. It's supposed to be like yarn porn, food porn. I get to live out this teenager life I never had, or I am a teenager and I identify with this, or I don't identify with this, but I really like yarn.
Big city porn. Getting back to what we were saying about Chicago.
Yes.
Chicago is kind of magic in these books, and not just because of the different ways that geography twists and turns and bends. Chicago is a magical place. And Scotty and her friends have like full run of the city.
And so much money.
Yes. How?
I mean, how? You have the mob in Chicago, right?
I didn't know you guys knew about that. We've been trying to keep it secret for so long.
So this is why all the chicks actually got together. Their parents are in the mob. So this was all predestined. Because their parents are like, we need an excuse to get all the girls in one place while we carry out our nefarious schemes. So, okay, we're going to trade off every other week. We get all the girls in one place and we all meet up here.
Where are they going to meet? Where are we going to have these girls meet?
Yeah, at each other's houses. So, you know, we take turns. Every week, you know, every week they go to another girl's house and we meet elsewhere. And, you know, they're just excited because the parents are out of the house and they don't realize that they are selling rat milk to the public schools of Chicago, which is probably not a joke anymore.
You know what it is, though? Where do the girls meet at the beginning? They're at the yarn store. Alice is running all of this. She keeps the girls busy and occupied while their parents are doing whatever horrible mob things they're doing.
When she's Alice, the Dawn! Yeah,
when
she's
Alice
the Dawn!
Well, listen, when Alice sells the shop and retires from running the store, it's because she was found out. In the third
goodness.
Book, she has a different name.
Oh my goodness. She has an alias.
It's not a very good one because all she does is change her last name. But yeah, different name in the third book. And it's because she was found out and she went into kind of half-assed hiding.
And she wrote a book all about knitting when, meanwhile, she was running a yarn cartel in Chicago. What was really hidden inside those yarn balls? What's really in that chocolate, Scotty?
All right. I do need to sign off in a few minutes. As I have my Wednesday night phone date with my mom. So let's, aww. We can also come back next week and hit anything else that we wanted to hit.
Before we do Born Confused.
Yeah, and before we put this monstrosity out into the world. So are there any stray observations that you have about Chicks with Sticks?
The fashion is really good.
Yes.
Like, really good. Like, I want them to make outfits for me, but please, please, please don't ever bring back low-rise bell-bottom jeans.
Oh, no. Although I think Bella probably looked really pretty in those.
Oh, I bet she did. She probably looked pretty in everything. And now she's president, right? Like, that's what
happens. Obviously, happened. In this alternate timeline, she becomes president. Did you happen to write down any specific outfits? Because I had one that I wanted to talk about.
I did, but you should go first.
So the one that stuck out most to me was the outfit Scotty ends up wearing when the chicks go to see a Cubs game at Wrigley Field. It starts out that she's wearing her pink and red striped pajamas, and she goes out in public in them. She had some lip gloss and a rhinestone butterfly barrette and a pink wool cloche hat with burgundy suede flowers. So that's her outfit when she goes outside, and then they end up going to this baseball game, so she needs a new outfit. She takes off the PJs. She keeps the barrette and the hat. But now she puts on bell bottoms, a belted camel coat with a faux fur collar, brown leather gloves, and her ratty blue scarf that was the first thing she knitted. That's three different shades of blue, all done in beginner garter stitch and wrapped around her neck.
She says, "I'm making a statement." And Tay says, "Yeah, I think Dorothy Parker made the same one 80 years ago." Which is totally how I flirted with the person I liked when I was 15, by the way.
Yes.
There was a lot of Dorothy Parker and Oscar Wilde between us.
Oh, Scotty and Tay forever. What was your outfit?
My outfit is the one that Amanda is wearing when she goes over to invite Scotty out for bagels and then to this baseball game where magic happens, except it's the opposite of magic. She is wearing a fuzzy gray drawstring pants, flared over skinny silver sneakers, an off-the-shoulder ivory top, and a purple and gold skinny scarf wrapped around her neck, which is so very much of that time period, and I love it, and I would still wear it. A lot of these outfits are still wearable if you change the silhouettes a little bit.
I'm an old person, and as far as I'm concerned, it's still like 1973, and that's how I dress. So I will take your word for what people wear in the future.
Carry era and luck, because this year, everybody else is in 1973, too.
But if everybody else is in 1973, then how am I going to feel special and different?
Apparently by going to Harvard like Bella did.
or possibly by knitting lace for my boyfriend's mom.
So we decided that in the podcast, we wanted to do two recommendations each. We're keeping it to two recommendations each, or else there would be another hour of us talking about books. Now, I always love another hour talking about books, but you readers and listeners, maybe not so much.
We want you to be able to get on with your lives.
So, Carrie, what did you choose for your read-alike for the Chicks with Sticks novels?
My read-alike is not going to surprise anybody who knows me or anyone who listened to this entire podcast. We've mentioned our love for the Betsy Tacy books by Maud Hart Lovelace. And Chicks with Sticks is probably the closest modern series we've got to the Betsy Tacy books. I'm going to recommend Heaven to Betsy, the first book about Betsy Ray's high school years in particular, because it is cozy and warm and wonderful and full of great relationships and cute boys and singing and fudge. And it's great. Betsy Tacy forever.
The nice thing about the high school Betsy Tacy books is they all map really nicely onto the Chicks with Sticks books. So Chicks with Sticks, the first book, maps nicely onto Heaven to Betsy, which is the first one. And then Betsy in Spite of Herself kind of matches up with the second book, which is all about identity and boys and trying to be something maybe you quite aren't and not really knowing how to do it. And the third book is all about how Betsy and Scotty, respectively, are growing up and pushing hard against this. And then the fourth book, you know, Betsy and Joe and Scotty and Tay are all about how... Oh, sorry. One of those doesn't exist. Oh. And what are you reading now?
What I'm reading now is the book Eliza and Her Monsters by Francesca Zappia. This is a book about the internet and fandom and dealing with mental illness. And there's a cute boy. Yeah, I have no idea why this would be like interesting or relevant to me, except, oh yeah, this is pretty much my entire life. All right, so that's what I was reading. What are you reading this week?
This week, I am reading Knit One, Girl Two by Shira Glassman, which is about two nice Jewish girls falling in love with each other. And it's about knitting and about art and about families. And there's a first date at a science museum, and it's the cutest thing ever. Best book to read in a bounce house at a carnival at queer camp.
Now, was this your read-alike or was it your current read?
Yes.
Excellent. I have a feeling that might end up setting a precedent.
So my other read-alike slash current read is the Lara Jean series by Jenny Han. I think this one really counts more as a read-alike for not only the Chicks with Sticks books, but also I feel it's the closest thing we've got to a modern Betsy Tacy series, which is pretty amazing for a book that, you know, in which one encounters the F word, memeing naked footage of the main character and her boyfriend, and little girls who watch The Sopranos.
Yes. Yeah, we will definitely have to talk about those books sometime soon because I love them too. And I hadn't thought of them as being anything like Betsy Tacy until you mentioned it a few weeks ago. And you are absolutely right.
The protagonist is a wonderful crafty baker, scrapbooker who hangs out with old people and is just delightful. And the boy is kind of a Beck, but everybody else in the book is just delightful.
Yeah, so those are our recommendations for the week. And I think that's probably it. This has been Go Your Own YA. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Marie.
Thank you so much for listening. I think we're all done. Bye.
Bye.